having one of the most powerful brands in the world like Porsche with us is a massive achievement and very important to get all these messages out. There is a big appetite, a lot of appetite to become a team, a manufacturer of Formula E. And it's an exciting time to see who will join the most competitive grid in motorsport.
This is Inside E, the Porsche Formula E podcast.
Hello and welcome to Inside E, and we've got yet another top guest on the podcast. So it's a very warm welcome to Alberto Longo, Chief Championship Officer and co-founder Formula E. Alberto, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start first and foremost by reflecting on your career? As I gather, after completing your studies, you became an investment consultant. So I'm intrigued to know where the passion for motorsport came from.
Well, the passion from motorsport, I mean, basically, I was more interested on the business side of motorsport. It's true. I study law, and I remember Alejandro calling me once, I don't know, back in 2000. And he came to Mexico once. I was living there in Mexico, and he told me, listen, I'm considering swapping even my political career by joining a friend, which was Flavio Briatore by then, and he's planning to do some investment in TV rights in Spain. What do you think about that? Why don't you join me and we do it together? And frankly, I mean, if you compare the life of an investment consultant to the glamorous fashion life of a motorsport expert, then my decision was sort of easy.
Now, the Alejandro that you're referring to is, of course, Alejandro Agag, and you then formed a racing team with him. So how did that come about? Is it a case of once you got the bug for motorsport, we thought, right, let's go for it?
Yeah, we had... originally, as I was mentioning before, we were offered. I mean, Flavio told us, like, with a lot of vision, I will say, that there was a Spanish driver who could become the next world champion in Formula One, and obviously that was Fernando Alonso. And by then, I remember that the TV viewership numbers in Spain were really bad, so there was an opportunity for us to buy out the TV rights for Spain and then resell it to some, to broadcasters there in Spain. And that was basically the first step into motorsport. So I got myself dealing or negotiating with different broadcasters in, back in 2002, I think it was. And without much knowledge about what I was doing, but we finally end up with a very good contract. And Fernando in 2003 won his first race, and then those rides obviously become very valuable. So it was kind of a very good business that we had for almost 9 years after that. The idea of forming this team in GP2 by then was basically Alejandro and I. At some point we had done this TV deal already for a long term. We were still very young, very active, so we said, listen, we need to do something else, you know, let's why don't we buy a GP2 team and basically have more skin in the game. And this is how the whole idea came into place. We found then couple of partners along the way, like Mutua Madrileña and Banco Santander, who help us financing that team for almost 8 years that we were owning the ADAX team. Yeah.
Now, that particular role at that point in your, shall we say, motorsport career, and that particular experience must have been hugely beneficial in terms of now working with Formula E teams, because you get it, don't you? Because you've been there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my day-to-day role there, even though I was the co-owner of the team, et cetera, I was also the team manager. So I was basically the day-to-day guy on the team, and now I'm in both. I mean, I have been in both places of the table. You know, I mean, whenever one team manager, one team owner, one team principal, they come and meet with me. You know, it's for me very important to have been in their feet before, and I think this is highly appreciated by most of the people in the ecosystem, because they can see that what I say is basically common sense, because I have been in their feet before.
I'm also fascinated to know how you and Alejandro created the concept, the idea of Formula E. So how was Formula E born?
Well, that's a very good question, and there is a lot of stories and gossips around it. But I have to tell you that most of them are true. And I remember Alejandro, that was basically a very sort of casual meeting from Alejandro, the president of the FIA, Jan Todt, and then a European commissioner for mobility, which his name is Antonio Tagliani. They went into a dinner in Paris in a restaurant called La Estrella, a very nice restaurant, by the way. And they were talking about, the future of mobility. And at some point, the three of them, very visionary people, they all saw the future was going to be electric. That was back in 2011. They start talking about how could a championship become fully electric, you know, a kind of a single-seater championship become fully electric. And the technology, it wasn't just there yet, but they basically decided on that meeting that FIA should do a tender in order to find a promoter who was brave enough to take the responsibility of launching the first single-seater fully electric championship. And that was an idea by then, only 2 years after that they launched the tender, and we won it. The kind of funny thing is that Alejandro, such a smart guy, of that dinner, he said, okay, if you ever launch this tender, let's do it was kind of a joke, but let's do a kind of a signature on a servlet that I will become the promoter if you ever do this sort of tender. And actually there is this servlet is framed on that restaurant, on that table, and you can go and check it anytime.
That is absolutely brilliant. I was going to ask you where the serviette is. I was intrigued to know. I'll have to visit that. That's a brilliant, brilliant story. But from that moment in Paris, when you realised it was going to become real, what were the initial challenges to create the series, would you say?
Well, everything. As you can imagine, when we finally won the tender, there was five different bidders to the tender. We got in the shortlisted of two, and finally this other one decided to leave eventually. And so we basically won the tender. And that was 27th of August, 2013. Originally, we were planning to start Formula E in 2015, which was only 24 months after, and that was a massive challenge. As you can imagine, we didn't even have the car, the technology, the teams, the manufacturers, the cities, no drivers, no absolutely anything, no partners. But only 5 months after, we were basically going ahead very well with everything. So we start signing the first teams. We start making sure that we had some cities into the calendar. And then we receive a call from Mr. Jan Todt, and he said, guys, I'm sorry, but I need you guys to start in September. And that was literally 6 months after this call, or 30 months right after we put a signature into a piece of paper, you know. And I think that was the biggest challenge that we have ever had in our lives. But then everything came to reality on that September 2014 with the first ever race of Beijing.
And when you reflect I mean, it's quite phenomenal, the meteoric rise of Formula E as a series. And now, in its seventh season, it's been awarded, you know, FIA World Championship status. I mean, that is quite a feat. But when you reflect, I mean, no one's got a prediction or a crystal ball, but it's quite unbelievable, the growth and the development and the success of the series.
Totally. I mean, I remember, I mean, I have said it so many times. If someone tells me 7 years ago that we were going to be in this position, I would have thought that they were absolutely crazy. It is a massive success, but it's also a massive responsibility for us as well. We need to basically cope with all this responsibility that many people, different stakeholders has put into us, and hopefully we're doing right for them.
And you mentioned the significance of manufacturers, because I guess having the likes of such iconic brands such as Porsche involved, you know, really does add a lot of weight, shall we say, to the series.
Totally, totally. I mean, Porsche, our vision for road relevance, for technology, innovation. We share also the same values of sustainability, inclusion, equality. I mean, having one of the most powerful brands in the world like Porsche with us is a massive achievement and very important to get all these messages out. Yeah.
So let's move then, shall we, to the present, because I'd love to get a bit of a feel of how you would describe your current field of activities in Formula E. What are the most important projects currently?
Well, as a co-founder, I sit more or less on top of everything, you know, but my day-to-day job is more focused on the operation, the delivery of the races, you know, the FIA and teams liaison. And the most challenging one in these moments, which is the development of the calendar.
The calendar is difficult at the moment, but obviously given the, shall we say, the global pandemic and COVID, and we'll talk about that in the moment. But I'm really intrigued to know how you select cities to be included in the race calendar, because you embrace every corner of the globe. But what are the kind of key, shall we say, factors when you make your decision?
Yeah. So, well, the most important thing first is that we need to have the will of the city. And, you know, then we go into what we call the feasibility study. And that will tell us whether the track that they are offering or proposing is viable. Otherwise, we go into the city and we try to look for some viable options. We cannot forget that we transform the heart of the biggest cities of the world into a permanent track only for one day. Once we know it's viable and that track is feasible, then we look into many different factors. I would say such as, I don't know, how attractive the city is, what is their sustainability agenda, the plans of EV infrastructures. Logistics, as you can imagine, plays a massive role into the decision, as we want to be as efficient as possible. And with all these factors and some others, we create some sort of a scorecard and present it to our board first to take the first decision, and then to the FIA for final approval. That's basically how we plan the calendar ahead.
We have to talk about the last 12 months, Alberto, because all industries, all sectors, all sports have faced their own challenges given the global pandemic. Last 12 months or so, I know, has been incredibly challenging for you and the team. But if we're going to be really positive, what have you taken out of this very challenging time? What lessons do you think you and the team have learned?
I think the most important thing, and it's pretty obvious, but it's worth mentioning, is the adaptability and the collaboration that we have found in teams, manufacturers, and different stakeholders has been absolutely key. And this is my best learning, that we are working as a team. We had a common issue, a common problem, shared by the world, not only the live sport events or anything, but it's affecting absolutely everyone. And I found myself in a very good position, because I I was the one dealing or leading this project and try to get us to some races last season and obviously to deliver the calendar this season as well. And it was a very positive surprise that, you know, that we were able to, through different calls, through different meetings, everyone was showing that flexibility and that collaboration. And that is absolutely key in these moments of uncertainty. Unfortunately, uncertainty is the word that everybody has been using more in live event business in the last 12 months. But I can proudly say that with the partners we have on the table, we have found that flexibility that allow us to, you know, to do everything with enough time, you know, and enough preparation to deliver what we have delivered and what we are about to deliver in this season.
You're right. Flexibility is really the key word. And talking about flexibility, the calendar last year was quite a movable feast, but we have to talk about the season finale in Berlin, which was hugely successful, never been done before. You must have been absolutely delighted with the impact and the way that the season concluded. I mean, how did that come about in terms of planning and choosing specifically Berlin, shall we say, as the venue?
Yeah, Berlin was kind of an easy decision. It's probably one of these venues that we all love to go. We have obviously a lot of stakeholders who are from Germany, so it was kind of an easy decision because it's also a private venue, so we can basically go. We don't disrupt anyone. We can work 24/7 on that place. I think this factor of working 24/7, it was critical because we needed to do three different tracks in, as you know, we did six races in only 9 days. And that was a massive operational challenge that, as you mentioned, no one has done before. But on top of that, we did it in the middle of the pandemic and with no positive cases at all in the bubble. That, for me, it's called responsibility, you know, and we needed to be responsible towards not only our ecosystem, but also the people who is living in the cities that we race. It was key to crown a champion. It was absolutely necessary to do that season finale in Berlin, and I can proudly say that we did it in the most responsible way.
The Targ Heuer Porsche Formula E team officially committed to the Gen 3 regulations. So I just want to get your thoughts of what extent this is such an important and significant sign for Formula E and indeed the future of the racing series.
So as you can imagine, we're delighted. We're so honored, so proud. It's a huge accomplishment to have Porsche commit to Gen 3 and show the success of partnership and share future vision.
The series is just growing and growing. Can you give our listeners maybe some hints or some news about potential new teams and manufacturers that might indeed join Formula E in the near future? Any little little exclusive there, Alberto?
What if I would love to, but I think I would get into some sort of trouble if I say so. But no, seriously, I mean, every week a new car manufacturer is coming out to say that they're making the shift to electric. That is not because manufacturers didn't realize the importance of sustainability, but they have realized in 10, 20 years' time, we'll all be using very different ways of transport, you know, and in the future. Luckily, the manufacturers and brands in Formula E realized that a long time ago. But coming back to your question, there is a big appetite, a lot of appetite to become a team, a manufacturer of Formula E. And it's an exciting time to see who will join the most competitive grid in motorsport.
Yeah, without question. Now, the new regulations also mean that the race cars will be even lighter, more powerful, and therefore faster, which is just a really, really an attractive thought, isn't it? As you say, it's such an exciting time for the series.
It is. There is a lot of momentum, but obviously, I think it's also very important for us that we keep remaining safety as paramount for Formula E, you know, and the Gen 3 era will, as you said, bring a lighter car, more powerful, and that could potentially affect the security and the restrictions at the venues that we have chosen. But it's important to highlight that obviously we will remain an FIA Grade 3 homologated track, because it's exactly what FIA believe that we should be. And as mentioned, safety is paramount for us, and we work very closely with the FIA towards that.
Alberto, I know how much you and the team place an emphasis on fan engagement with the likes of Fan Boost. So how important is that to bring the series into the homes of people across the world so they feel really engaged?
Yeah, totally. I think it's we need to sit in the in you know, midway in between a almost a video game and a real race, you know, and I think this is such an important factor that all of our ecosystem, all of our partners and teams and manufacturers really bought into it. At the moment, we're in the middle of the process of defining the future regulations and roadmap of the series, and obviously, we will be looking to the next innovation and technology to entertain and especially engage with our fans.
Talking about innovation and technology, I hope you don't mind me putting you a little bit on the spot, but I'd love to give your thoughts about where you see Formula E in 5 years.
Well, that's a very easy question for me. I'm quite
good.
A brutal person, and I'm very transparent and honest. So I see Formula E being the reference in motorsport, in road relevance, in technology, in innovation, in sustainability, in inclusion, and in equality. As easy as that. Lot to do in front of us, but we were born to be the reference in all these matters, in all these fields.
Excellent stuff. And I guess, you know, short term, the aims and the objectives and the hopes are that, you know, obviously you want fans back at the racetrack and in the e-village enjoying this fabulous series.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to. Obviously, you know how quickly the plans are changing. We keep on working on different scenarios with or without fans. And obviously, at the end, we are subject and depending on the local authorities' permission to bring the fans back or not to the event. On top of that, obviously, we have our own safety measures, you know, to guarantee that if they are allowed in, obviously, it will be in the safest way possible. You know, safety and responsibility is paramount for Formula E. So it would be great to have fans as soon as possible, but I don't foresee that happening in the short term. We are still in the middle of the pandemic, but hopefully by the end of the season, we will see some races already with some fans on it.
Now, Alberto, end of March, Formula E released a Season 7 calendar update with two doubleheaders in Rome as well as Valencia. So I'd love to just gauge your thoughts. What was the reason behind this change?
Well, the reason is sort of we decided to do a doubleheader in Rome. Why did we do a doubleheader? Are we going to do a doubleheader as well in Valencia? It's for a simple reason of that I don't trust the COVID anymore. So I was just trying to be to respect as much as possible the number of races that we wanted to deliver by the end of the season. So if we have a challenge with any race to come, then we are already kind of banking races once we are there. And that's basically the main reason why we're doing these double headers in Rome first and then Valencia in the following week. This is going to be a trend. I mean, obviously, any time that we're going to be able to do at least one race, we will always try to do a double header.
So an inordinate amount of planning going on behind the scenes for you and your team. But let's reflect on Rome, shall we? Because, of course, Pascal Wehrlein celebrated his first podium with Porsche, which was truly phenomenal for him and indeed the team. So how would you reflect on Porsche's general performance in Season 7 so far?
Well, I think that what Porsche is doing is basically very, very difficult. They are the new pupil on the class. They are the newest team that has joined Formula E. And already being able to see Pascal and André fighting for the Super Pole and and obviously the race as well. It's in my point of view heroic. I think both of them had many challenges, as all the teams. The fact that we race in the heart of the cities and our tracks are always very technical, very difficult. But yeah, seeing Porsche, both drivers of Porsche, up there from this early stage, I think is yeah, quite remarkable.
Yeah, it was a fantastic effort from all the team and indeed Pascal. Now, you've mentioned the revised calendar, but compared to a one race E-Prix, what would you say is the difference having two races?
Well, I think for us now is more basically a solution to an actual challenge or problem that we are facing with the COVID. But honestly, we have discovered through the first two races in Diriyah and now the last two races in Rome that is actually working very well in terms of media. For me, keep the momentum is the most important thing. Again, being completely making sure that we're going to be doing these 15 races by the end of the season is the key target for Formula E this season. And yeah, basically there is no difference in between one and two races. The fact that we're doing two races in the same weekend, it's helping us to create a lot of momentum and to create a lot of media attention.
Yeah, it's interesting to gauge your thoughts about how successful this format is working. I mean, do you think or can you envisage that we will see more doubleheader events this season?
Well, definitely, yes. I mean, in this season, obviously, and again, due to the COVID, I think we need to use that format more and more. I think it's very efficient for us to be banking races. And once we get to basically do or deliver one, the whole track and how do we mount the track, the walls, fences, I think it's very efficient to basically use it for 2 days instead of one. And especially not knowing or having this uncertainty about what is going to happen in the future with the next races to come due to the COVID again. So definitely, yes, we will be using as many double headers as we can in order to get to these 15 races, you know.
Alberto, I'd like to look ahead with you to Valencia, because I'd love to know how Formula E came up with the Valencia E-Prix layout, because what makes the track layout Formula E specific, would you say?
Well, I think the target, I mean, let's not forget that obviously it's the FIA at the end who decide the track layout. We just, let's say, propose, and then the FIA take the final decision on what is going to be the final layout. For us, we take it very seriously, and we do a working group well in advance before presenting it to the FIA to make sure that we're going to have a lot of show and excitement and overtakings are going to happen. And that's that's basically the main things that we consider in order to propose a layout to the FIA, which is again the final one who take the decision.
Any predictions? Because the joy of this amazing championship is you can never predict the winners, and invariably, you know, you look back at last season, there were so many people, so many drivers at the top of the podium.
Yeah, well, predictions for me, It's quite difficult, as you said, but I can see a very strong Porsche, Mercedes. I can see very strong Jaguar as well. But again, the beauty about this championship is that anybody can win, and we have demonstrated that in the last six seasons, and hopefully this one is not going to be different.
As I mentioned, there's so much planning and logistics that are going on behind the scenes with you and the team in light of COVID. But can you give our listeners perhaps an insight into when there will be a further update on the remainder of the Season 7 calendar and any key announcements?
Yeah, we're planning to do this before the end of April. Again, the reason why we are delaying is in order to not make any changes once we have done an announcement. And this is, again, most probably happening by the end of the month of April, where we will deliver the rest of the calendar, which is going to be very exciting for all of
us.
Yeah,
look Look forward to seeing that. Alberto, I wish you and the team all the best for the rest of the season. No doubt it's going to be a thrilling season 7. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking the time to talk to us on Inside E.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
If you'd like more information, follow Porsche Formula E on Twitter and Instagram, or visit the Porsche newsroom. See you next time.
Inside E, Porsche Formula E podcast.